distance above the Diamantina. A human story from Northwest Queensland.
The mystery of the stolen aeroplane and the paralyzed girl whom John Nettlefold found in the cockpit is no nearer solution, and Napoleon Bonaparte, a brilliant half-caste detective, has been sent from Brisbane to investigate. Boney, as he prefers to be called, has just arrived at Coolabah Station by air with Dr. Knowles. He and Elizabeth have been examining the girl in her sick room, whilst John Nettlefold, Dr. Knowles and Ted Sharp, the boss stockman, await them in the lounge. It is almost dinner time.
Dr. Knowles,
Ted Sharp. Oh, yes, rather. We met in Golden Dawn once. How are you, Ted?
Fine, thanks, Doctor. How's the flying?
Oh, fair enough, thanks. The bad season hasn't begun yet.
Were you responsible for bringing this detective here this evening?
Yes, why?
Always messing about upstairs like one of those chaps you read about in books. You know, Sexton Blake, Sherlock Holmes, and all that mob.
What's the matter, Ted? You don't seem to approve of him very much.
Oh, I suppose he's all right. As a matter of fact, I did the wrong thing. I stuck him up with a revolver.
You stuck him up? What on earth for?
Well, I was walking along the corridor when I saw a strange man nip out of the girl's bedroom, slink along the passage and make for the stairs. Naturally, I thought he was the man who'd been there before, in the middle of the night.
Yes,
you remember?
Yes, don't tell me it was Boney.
Yes, it was. I stuck my revolver in his back and threatened to shoot him if he moved. Oh, you've no idea what a disappointment it was.
I can imagine it.
What was he doing, anyway?
I'm blessed if I know. Said he was trying to find out whether that man could have got out of the sick room and reached the stairs before Miss Elizabeth put her head out of the door.
I suppose you spoiled his experiment.
Oh, no, he seemed quite satisfied it was possible. And he also said it let you out, Doctor.
Let me out?
Yes. I think he had an idea you poisoned the girl.
What? Rubbish, you. You can't mean that.
Well, there it is. He told me he suspected everybody.
Oh, but they've got to do that, Ted. As a matter of fact, Boney's a very decent chap. I've talked to him quite a bit, and he's the most observant, unassuming fellow I've seen for a long time.
I'm afraid his color puts people against him.
Oh, goodness knows why. Now, what difference does it make whether a man's skin is white or brown or green or mauve, for that matter? Now, I've knocked about a bit among colored races. And taken all round, they're not so very different from us whites.
Quite right, Knowles. Ah, there you are, Elizabeth. Come in, Mr. Bonaparte. You've met everybody, haven't you?
Yes, Mr. Nettlefold.
Well, Boney, discovered any clues yet?
Not yet, Dr. Knowles. Miss Nettlefold, I notice that the sick room has two pairs of French windows. They open out onto a balcony, do they not?
Yes, that's right.
Were they opened on the night when the brandy was poisoned?
Why, yes. One pair was open all night. But all the curtains were drawn.
I see. Then I have no doubt that the intruder watched you from outside the open window. He accepted the opportunity you gave him when you retired to the dressing room. Having reached the bedside table, knowing the plan of the house, he went out through the door, because that was to him the nearest exit.
You think he must have known the lay of the house?
Undoubtedly. If he had not, he would have gone back the way he came.
Yes, that seems right enough.
You did not notice, Miss Nettlefold, if he wore a mask?
No, his back was towards me. When I looked again, he was outside the door, just closing it.
As matters have turned out, perhaps it is just as well you did not confront him.
Why, Mr. Bonaparte?
Because I have no doubt he would have been desperate. And desperate men, Mr. Sharp, can be dangerous. Sometimes they carry revolvers.
I don't think I understand you.
Never mind. Mr. Nettlefold, I observe this house has two halls. That is rather unusual.
Well, you see, this part of the house was built long after the eastern part. Originally, the house faced the east. Then, when the addition was built on, the center passage was continued back here, and this hall was planned. As you see, it opens onto the south veranda, which is always comparatively cool and shady.
Yes, yes. And where are the kitchen and the servants' quarters?
Well, they're in a separate building connected by a covered passage.
Thank you. And, of course, the hall door was not locked that night.
No, it's never locked.
I hope you will forgive me asking so many questions, but you understand my time is limited. And after all, I am no more than a detective.
Of course, Mr. Butterfield, I understand.
Now, this map of Coolibar Station you were so kind enough to give me, Mr. Nettlefold, you showed me the position of a hut beside a bore named Faraway Bore.
Yes.
How far is it from Emu Lake, where the aeroplane was found?
Oh, roughly 8 miles. It is north of the main station track leading to the lake.
How far is it from here?
64 miles.
Thank you. Which of your men are there at present?
Ned Hamblin, the stockman, and two blacks.
Ah, yes. Bill Sykes and Shut Eye.
Now, that's right. You seem to know everything about my station already.
That is my job, Mr. Nettlefold. Are there any spare hacks and gear at this faraway boar hut?
Oh, yes, plenty of them.
I think that hut would make an excellent headquarters. Would you lend me a horse and saddle and the services of those two blacks?
Ah, yes, with pleasure. If there's anything at all you want, please ask me.
Thank you very much. I hope you'll excuse me talking shop, Miss Nettlefold, but I have one more favor to ask from your father.
Oh, of course.
It seems to me that this continued calm weather indicates a severe disturbance.
Yes, that's my opinion, too.
In which case, I would like to make my investigations as soon as possible. I wonder if you could possibly drive me up to Faraway Bore tonight.
Certainly.
Oh, Mr. Burney, surely I've done enough traveling for one day.
Yes, you need a rest, you know. Why, after you left the train, you did 110 miles by car, then 104 with me in my aeroplane. Now, isn't that enough for you?
I have a very strong constitution, Dr. Knowles.
But dash it, old man. Traveling is no joke in this part of the country.
Faraway Bore is 64 miles over a rough track, you know. 15 of them like a switchback railway over the Diamantino River Channel.
Nevertheless, if it is not too much trouble, Mr. Nettlefold.
Certainly not. I'll take you. I can make the return journey easily before midnight.
Thank you so much.
You'll be staying the night, won't you, Doctor?
If you don't mind, I want to keep the patient under my observation.
All right then, Bernie. We'll get away after dinner. Kid, you'll be on guard tonight, won't you, with your two dogs?
Yes, Mr. Nettlefold.
I think we can safely leave the house to your care.
Oh, by the way, Miss Nettlefold, how did the station dogs behave that night when you saw the intruder?
Oh, they were fairly quiet. One of them barked half-heartedly all night.
Indeed. Well, that strengthens the theory that the intruder was well acquainted with the house. The dog must have known the poisoner. Had he been a stranger, the dog would have barked more than half-heartedly. So would the others. It seems probable that the man works here, or is a visitor.
What a pity the dogs can't speak.
Yes, Mr. Sharp, it is. A very great pity. Have you ever seen the dogs, Dr. Knowles?
No, I haven't.
Then that must be the end of my suspicions of you, Doctor.
Why? Did you suspect me?
I did, my dear doctor, I did. Quite without reason, of course.
Oh, well, that's all right. I thought you might have discovered something about me.
Is there anything to discover?
Well, that's not for me to say. You're a detective, you know.
Yes. Sergeant Cox has informed me that the population of this district numbers about 200. I regard all these people, including the present company, as fish for my net. Amongst these fish is a stingray, probably two stingrays. To discover the stingrays, it is essential for me to examine all the fish.
Stingray, indeed, a most unpleasant description, Bowley.
But true, Mr. Nettlefold. Now, you will admit, Doctor, that it was quite possible for you to enter the sick room having waited beyond the window curtains for the opportunity.
No, I don't think I'd have done that. After all, as a doctor, I had many better opportunities.
Nevertheless, I carried out my little experiment with Miss Nettlefold. I proved that the intruder could have reached the stairs before Miss Nettlefold reached the door. Of course, it does not entirely exonerate you, but it does at least support your innocence.
Thank you, Bowley.
I am glad, too. After your courage in the air this afternoon, I should have been very upset to have arrested you.
What's this, Bernie? Courage?
Yes, Miss Nettlefold. The engine of his aeroplane failed, and he coaxed it to life again with about 30 seconds to spare.
Indeed, that's the first I've heard of a failing engine.
Oh, it was nothing. Just a piece of fluff or grit in the petrol system. Happened over some dense mulga timber. We'll call it wood, of course.
I do not intend flattery, Dr. Knowles, when I say that I cannot but admire your coolness in the face of death.
These Air Force pilots, you know, death means nothing to them.
However, I shall not make the mistake of suspecting the doctor again.
Whom do you suspect, then?
Yes, tell us, please. Have you any theory about the case?
Several, Miss Nettlefold. There are obvious facts concerning some of them. The unfortunate young lady is not known in this district. I incline to the thought that she was not in the district when the aeroplane was stolen, and that it was stolen with the express purpose of bringing about her destruction.
Yes, that seems very likely.
It is reasonable to assume that the person who stole the aeroplane is one having intimate knowledge of the district. and that having the young lady on his hand somewhere a little further away, he stole the machine, flew it to where she was, took her up to Emu Lake paddock, which he knew was resting at the time.
Resting, Barney?
Yes, you know, the cattle were not being grazed there at the time. There would be no likelihood of stockmen visiting it for a while, so it was obviously a good place for his purpose.
Yes, it was only quite by chance that I happened to drive out there on that particular day.
I suggest, then, that the man jumped out by parachute, leaving the girl a victim in the plane and hoping that it would be destroyed when it crashed. And in the resultant debris would be found the charred remains of the supposed thief.
Indeed. If it had caught fire, as it might easily have done, we should have had no evidence whatsoever.
Are you any better off now, Boney?
Indeed, yes. But please allow me to continue. The young woman was discovered in the abandoned machine at roughly 1 o'clock in the afternoon. By extraordinary chance, the aeroplane made a perfect landing in the Emu Lake paddock. Captain Narvaker says the monoplane was easy to fly and could conceivably have remained in the air for a period without control. You will agree there, I suppose, Dr. Knowles?
Oh, yes, certainly.
Then Mr. and Miss Nettlefold leave the machine at about 1:30, and you arrive here shortly before 6 o'clock, having called nowhere and having seen no one en route. At 6 o'clock, Mr. Nettlefold rings up Sergeant Cox, and at 4 o'clock the next morning, a serious attempt is made to poison the patient's brandy. Now, that is very strange, isn't it?
Jove, I hadn't looked at it like that before. Who could have known about the girl but ourselves?
Exactly. Then swift action follows the failure to the crash, the machine, and to kill the young lady. The aeroplane is set on fire in the paddock.
Someone must have known a great deal about the movements out at Coolabah.
Yes, that narrows our search, does it not? I must discuss the telephone system with you later, Mr. Nettlefold. There may be a leakage somewhere.
Of course, we may have been washed at Emu Lake.
You may. That is why I wish to inspect the paddock before the weather breaks. I cannot afford to lose valuable evidence. The most important thing of all, of course, is to identify the young lady. When we have done that, we shall not be far from solving the mystery.
You made a remark to the girl just now which rather puzzled me, Bernie.
Yes. Now let me describe what I know about this young lady. A description of her, of course, has been circulated throughout Australia. Her initials are M.M., and she is employed in an office as a typist or else at home doing some typewriting work.
How on earth do you know that?
By the fact that the balls of both forefinger and the outer edges of both thumbs are distinctly flattened by striking the keys of a typewriter.
Well, I'm blessed.